the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of January 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, the President made his State of the Union address last night. I'll have detailed information on how it related to agriculture. Paul Cooley usually joins us to talk about the futures markets. He's away from the office this afternoon, so we'll hear the President in his stead. A bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and you can always hear it on our website at willag.org. The Closing Market Report, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures from the March winter wheat pit in Chicago at $8.56.5 for the soft, red up 18 and a quarter. May at $8.84.25, 18 and three quarters higher. In July, wheat at $9 a penny and a quarter, up 18 and three quarters. The hard red in Kansas City finished the lead up in March at $9.40, up 22.5. Corn pit followed suit. It was higher as well, $6.57.75, the settlement price for the March, up 13 and three quarters. May at $6.68, up 13 and three quarters. In July at $6.72.75, up 13 and three quarters. December corn at $5.90.75, 11 and three quarters higher. March soybean futures $13.85.5, that is, up 11. May at $13.96.5, up 11. July beans at $14.03, up 10 and three quarters. And the November futures finished at $13.23.75, up 11 cents on the afternoon. March bean meal at $3.74.40, $1.80 higher. March soybean oil at $56.70, up 92. Live cattle futures, February contract 107.22.5, finished 97.5 cents higher. April at 112.27.5, up a buck 12.5. January feeders at 126.35, or 37.5 cents higher. March futures at 126.12.5, up a buck, and the February lean hog futures, $83.25, up $1.20. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the March contract at $87.40 a barrel, up $1.21. Ethanol at $2.32.08, that's 5 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.49, up a penny and 7 tenths. The heating oil or diesel fuel 7 7/10 cents higher at $2.67. And the gold at $1,333 even finished 70 cents higher on the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,002. Up 24 points. The U.S. dollar at 77.89 is down 0.11, and the CRB index at 332.81 is 5.24 higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for Urbana-Champaign as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. They say cloudy skies, a high near 29 degrees, north-northwest winds at about 9 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 19, west winds around 8 miles an hour. On Thursday, a 30% chance of snow showers, mostly cloudy, the high near 30, west-southwest winds between 7 and 11. And Thursday night, a chance of flurries before midnight, mostly cloudy, a low of 23 degrees, west-northwest winds between 6 and 9. By the time we get to Friday, skies will remain mostly cloudy. The high, though, near 35 degrees, west-southwest winds between 6 and 11 miles an hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 25, and Saturday, partly sunny, the high near 34 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 20. Sunday, partly sunny, a high near 30, and Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of just 19 degrees. We'll talk with Mike Tenora of tstorm.net when we get to the bottom of the hour and take a look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on the Closing Market Report. Paul Cooley is out of the office this afternoon, so no agricultural futures for him from him today. In a moment, though, we'll take a look at President Obama's State of the Union address from last night.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Did you watch the president last night give his State of the Union address? I do so each and every year and always intently listening for references to agriculture. Last night, President Barack Obama made many of them. About 8 minutes into the program, he started to give some detail, not much, but a little detail of his vision for the next year or several years for the United States. Mr. Obama started with a reference to Sputnik, the space race, research, and biofuels and energy, all related, of course, in my opinion, to agriculture.
This is our generation's Sputnik moment. 2 years ago, I said that we needed to reach a level of research and development we haven't seen since the height of the space race. And in a few weeks, I will be sending a budget to Congress that helps us meet that goal. We'll invest in biomedical research, information technology, and especially clean energy technology.
Oh, there it is, clean energy technology. And in the world of the farm, that means biofuels.
An investment that will strengthen our security, protect our planet, and create countless new jobs for our people. Already we're seeing the promise of renewable energy.
Nice. Again, if you're on the farm in agriculture, renewable energy translates into ethanol and biodiesel. Let's move forward about 30 seconds in the speech.
And to spur on more success stories like the Allen Brothers, we've begun to reinvent our energy policy. We're not just handing out money.
Actually, the Bush administration started that process after 9/11, but last week, U.S. EPA, under the Obama administration, pushed it forward just a bit and said, hey, if your car is 2001 or newer, it's okay to use 15% ethanol blends in it.
We're not just handing out money. We're issuing a challenge. We're telling America's scientists and engineers that if they assemble teams of the best minds in their fields and focus on the hardest problems in clean energy, we'll fund the Apollo projects of our time. At the California Institute of Technology, they're developing a way to turn sunlight and water into fuel for our cars. At Oak Ridge National Laboratory, they're using supercomputers to get a lot more power out of our nuclear facilities. With more research and incentives, we can break our dependence on oil with biofuels and become the first country to have 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2050.
You know, I almost missed this reference to biofuels because of the electric cars and the 1 million vehicles, but it's an important one. Listen again.
With more research and incentives, we can break our dependence on oil with biofuels and become the first country to have...
It's the language that's important there. With more research and incentives, we can break our dependence on oil with biofuels.
We need to get behind this innovation. And to help pay for it, I'm asking Congress to eliminate the billions in taxpayer dollars we currently give to oil companies. I don't know if you've noticed, but they're doing just fine on their own. So instead of subsidizing yesterday's energy, let's invest in tomorrow's.
The president did not lay out the incentives he'd like to eliminate for the oil companies, but there are some good guesses if you follow agricultural policy. You'll know that the blender's tax credit for ethanol was extended in the lame duck session. That one, while not directly an oil company incentive, it actually goes to the blender, it is pretty close to an oil company incentive. And if you eliminate it in 1 year when it expires, you could move it closer to the farm and put that tax credit in another form at the biofuels producer or the ethanol plant right there in rural America.
Now, clean energy breakthroughs will only translate into clean energy jobs if businesses know there will be a market for what they're selling. So tonight, I challenge you to join me in setting a new goal. By 2035, 80% of America's electricity will come from clean energy sources.
He made a quick switch from biofuels or energy to run our automobiles to electricity and set out a goal of 80% of the electricity coming from clean sources by 2035. If you're a landowner, you're probably pretty excited at this point about the opportunity for two things: clean-burning coal technology and wind energy.
Some folks want wind and solar. Others want nuclear, clean coal, and natural gas. To meet this goal, we will need them all. And I urge Democrats and Republicans to work together to make it happen.
So why is it that the farmland owner might be excited about this potential? Well, if the government puts more money into clean-burning coal technology, that means the mineral rights underneath farmland might be worth more money. And the continuation, of course, of wind energy development, in particular in the state of Illinois, where there are many turbines now, could continue to spur that process along and bring another source of income to the farmland owner and potentially to the farmer. That wraps up the first thematic point of the State of the Union address given by President Obama. We'll skip over the number two point, which is on education, and get to infrastructure. That's the third point.
The third step in winning the future is rebuilding America. To attract new businesses to our shores, we need the fastest, most reliable ways to move people, goods, and information. From high-speed rail to high-speed internet.
On the infrastructure front, as it's related to agriculture, while the president talked about moving people and goods and high-speed internet, of course, he did not mention the river system. That's right. In the infrastructure conversation, the president didn't even take up the river system. Farmers and agribusiness have long wanted an upgrade to the lock and dams on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. The president, during his State of the Union infrastructure conversation, didn't even take up the river system. On the other hand, the president did take up a topic directly related to the river system and agricultural goods, the export market.
To help businesses sell more products abroad, we set a goal of doubling our exports by 2014. Because the more we export, the more jobs we create here at home. Already our exports are up. Recently we signed agreements with India and China that will support more than 250,000 jobs here in the United States. And last month we finalized a trade agreement with South Korea that will support at least 70,000 American jobs. This agreement has unprecedented support from business and labor, Democrats and Republicans. And I ask this Congress to pass it as soon as possible.
Many, but not all, in the agricultural community are avid supporters of free trade agreements.
Now, before I took office, I made it clear that we would enforce our trade agreements and that I would only sign deals that keep faith with American workers and promote American jobs. That's what we did with Korea. And that's what I intend to do as we pursue agreements with Panama and Colombia and continue our Asia-Pacific and global trade talks. Now, I have heard rumors that a few of you still have concerns about our new health care law.
I did an edit there at the applause to get to the health care issue, but only a couple of paragraphs.
So let me be the first to say that anything can be improved. If you have ideas about how to improve this law by making care better or more affordable, I am eager to work with you. We can start right now by correcting a flaw in the legislation that has placed an unnecessary bookkeeping burden on small businesses.
Actually, this is a really big one for farmers and small businesses, and I'll read something from a PowerPoint presentation the tax specialist at the U of I, Gary Hoff, prepared for the Farm Economic Summits that I hosted back in December. The PowerPoint has several things on it that relate to a 1099. Here's what Gary wrote in the notes. The cost of the health care bill is so high, money has to be generated to pay for it. Because the IRS believes people do not report income unless a Form 1099 is sent to the government, the bill, the health care bill that is, increases the filing of 1099 forms. The new requirement is for aggregate purchases of $600 or more to a single payer. It includes both property and services. Under the old law, the 1099 was only required for services. In addition, payments to corporations are no longer exempt. So what that means is that a small business or a farmer that pays Lowe's, or maybe, for instance, pays a high school student for some labor, over $600, has to file a 1099. The idea is that that would force the company or the person on the other side to declare that tax. When you're talking about a $600 fee and a small business, that becomes a nightmare of paperwork that could bury you. Stay with me now. There are only a couple more items in the speech that are related to agriculture. One of them has to do with domestic spending, which the president would like to freeze, and no doubt will have a direct impact on the 2012 Farm Bill debate.
So tonight, I am proposing that starting this year, we freeze annual domestic spending for the next 5 years. Now, this would reduce the deficit by more than $400 billion over the next decade and will bring discretionary spending to the lowest share of our economy since Dwight Eisenhower was president.
Eisenhower, by the way, signed the Agricultural Act into law that brought about 6 million farm operators and workers Social Security coverage. And he also said, farming looks mighty easy when your plow's a pencil and you're 1,000 miles from a cornfield.
To put us on solid ground, we should also find a bipartisan solution to strengthen Social Security for future generations.
The president didn't really follow up on the Social Security line of thinking. He did, however, move to government agencies and the idea that there might be too many of them.
There are 12 different agencies that deal with exports. There are at least 5 different agencies that deal with housing policy. Then there's my favorite example. The Interior Department is in charge of salmon while they're in freshwater, but the Commerce Department handles them when they're in saltwater. I hear it gets even more complicated once they're smoked.
You can trust that it will not be a laughing matter if decisions are made to combine agencies. If you'd like to listen to the president's State of the Union address, you can do that on the White House website. It's at www.whitehouse.gov. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication.
Dave Dickey is here now. He's our Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media and has this look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, European ethanol producers say they may file a trade complaint against U.S. ethanol tax credits over the extension of a U.S. ethanol tax credit for 2011 approved by Congress last month as part of the $858 billion tax reduction bill. A spokesperson for the U.S. Trade Commissioner declined to comment. A complaint from European producers would most likely be an anti-subsidy claim filed with the European Commission. U.S. grocers joined with food and drink makers to unveil a new system for putting nutritional information on packages ahead of plans from U.S. regulators who have called for clear and accurate labels to help fight obesity. Critics were quick to question the front-of-packaging labeling move, saying it appears to be an attempt to circumvent federal regulators. The new program from the Food Marketing Institute and the Grocery Manufacturers Association is called Nutrition Keys and will list calories, saturated fat, sodium, and total sugars on the front of packages. Nutrition Keys icons could begin appearing on packages as early as this year. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus plans to visit Colombia the week of February 20th to discuss the pending U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement. In a statement, Baucus points out that U.S. exporters are steadily losing market share in Colombia as other countries implement FTAs with Colombia. Colombia already has duty-free access to the U.S. market under the Andean Trade Preference Act, which is due to expire February 12th unless extended by Congress. Baucus says an FTA with Colombia would give U.S. exporters reciprocal duty-free access to Colombia's market. The Korea Meat Import Association today says that South Korea's pork imports are expected to increase by at least 20-30% this year from last year after a quarter of its pig population was culled to contain foot and mouth outbreaks. Asia's number four economy says that it would levy no tariff on up to 60,000 tons of frozen pork to meet lost local supply, while meat imports above the volume would be charged 25% of the current tariff. Potash Corporation is expected to post a big jump in profits tomorrow, driven by surging demand and higher prices for its fertilizer products. The burning issue is whether the world's largest fertilizer maker can follow up its performance for more of the same in 2011. In October, Potash Corporation forecast 2011 earnings of $8 to $8.75 a share. Analysts will pay close attention tomorrow to the company's 2011 potash sales volumes forecast. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Time to take a look at the marketplace. Scott Butcher of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Scott. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Todd.
It was kind of an up day in Chicago. Is that just turnaround after yesterday's losses?
Yeah, most of it looked like that anyway. Everything was higher in the outside markets, so it kind of led the charge early this morning, and then commodities kind of followed suit as we went through the day.
And has your bid been following pretty closely what's been happening in Chicago?
Yeah, things were a little bit higher. Corn was up 13, beans up 11, and wheat up 18. So really had a pretty good day here, pretty good close.
And farmers calling and asking whether they ought to make sales or not?
You know, things were kind of slow today. I don't think there was a lot of follow-through. Most guys are probably, what they've already sold, they're pretty content to wait around and see what happens here around planting time. I think maybe sales will be slow until then.
And what are your bids for the day?
Right now, cash corn, we are $6.54, beans $13.62.
Thank you so much, Scott.
No problem.
Scott Butcher is with the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Back in just 2 minutes with a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Popcorn Day. It's also National Peanut Brittle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1831, Heinrich Anton de Bary was born. A German botanist, he is considered a founder of modern plant pathology for his roles of fungi and other agents in causing plant diseases. In 1865, he proved that the life cycle of wheat rust involves two hosts, wheat and barberry. In 1838, the first state temperance law was passed in Tennessee. In 1861, Samuel Slocum died. He invented a machine to make pins with solid heads and a machine for sticking the pins in a paper holder for sale. In 1926, Francis Boyd was born, an American geologist. His studies on the origins of volcanic rocks contributed to the understanding of the formation of the Earth. And in 1932, William Wrigley Jr. died. He started out as a traveling salesman at the age of 13, selling soap for his father's company. He had a series of sales jobs, one of which gave chewing gum as a premium. Customers liked the gum better than the product, so he was soon marketing his own gum, Juicy Fruit, in 1893, and later that year, Wrigley's Spearmint. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather is with us, filling in today for Drew Lerner, who's out of the office. Mike, thanks so much for doing that. Let's start off with South America. What do you see in the crop there and the weather as it heads towards the harvest season?
Well, they've had a fairly intense drought taking place in Argentina over the last several weeks and even the last several months. You can go all the way back to mid-October and see that they had an extremely dry period from essentially mid-October through mid-January. Just in the last 24 to 36 hours, very heavy rain occurred in one of the key production areas of Argentina, kind of the Illinois of Argentina or Iowa, if you will, something like that. And it probably has aided their soybeans quite a bit. The only question is whether or not damage was already done prior to this rain occurring, because some of the deficits there were pretty huge. I mean, many of these areas are running, 10 to 20 inches drier during that period than 1 year ago. So we'll see. So that's definitely one of the areas that have improved, at least as far as soybeans go.
And then if you look further to the north in South America, talk about the Brazilian bean crop as well. It should be in part being harvested at this point.
Yeah, and the weather has cooperated fairly well over the last 5 days or so. If you go into the center-west region of Brazil, they have a very wet season. At this time of year, January is the peak of their rainy season. And it has been fairly wet leading up to just about 5 days ago, where the rain kind of shut down temporarily. And they have such dry soil there that it doesn't take much time for the soil to dry so you can harvest your soybeans. So more than likely, they're getting some good harvest progress taking place there, and then they'll be able to plant their second crop, soybeans, once the rain returns, which usually doesn't stay dry there for more than 5 to 10 days in January or February.
Can you take up winter wheat in other parts of the world, maybe India, to begin with, because they'll have a winter wheat crop that's coming on? We, of course, have one here in the United States as well.
Yeah, in India and in Pakistan, they kind of have an adjacent area there where most of the winter wheat is grown. It looks like it's been a great growing season so far. They have not had a lot of heat. They primarily rely on irrigation, and irrigation supplies were ample heading into the growing season. So at this point, I would say that region probably is doing pretty well. If you head into the U.S., things get a little more complicated because much of the plains from Kansas and southward have been very dry over the last 60 days, and dryness dates all the way back into last fall. So we need big rains to take place in March to really have a good hard red winter wheat crop, and it's hard to say if that will happen or not. So that's definitely a potential problem. Another potential problem is in the northern plains and in southern Canada, where spring wheat is planted in April. Very deep snowpack is in place right now, and that needs to melt very quickly. You almost want to have severe flooding in March, because at that point it would get rid of all the snow, things would dry out by April, and you could plant on time. But if you don't get a warm March, you'll probably end up with delayed spring wheat planting later on in the spring.
Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us today. We do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good talking to you.
That's Mike Tenora, agricultural meteorologist from Chicago, Illinois, filling in for Drew Lerner, who was out of the office this afternoon. You can find more from Mike online if you'd like at www.tstorm.net. You can find more from us at willag.org. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.